Now, here onwards, I'll be discussing a particular study that was done in Rotman School of Management in US on the MBA students. At Rotman School of Management, MBA students and executives are taught to reason generatively. It's one of the institutes among many who are having separate sessions and courses on how to do generative reasoning, right? So they are asked to seek insights, introspective thinking, something, you know, insights, some sort of a internal thinking process that don't fit neatly into the existing models. Think differently, in other words. They are coaxed to proceed from those insights to visualize new models and to prototype and redefine mental models, gathering additional data with each iteration. So they are asked to do some project, and while they're doing the project, they are asked to think differently. To think differently, even if it's not practical, think differently, and then from there you try to get more saliences and more causalities, right? They find it scary and somewhat transgressive. That is, as if they are crossing the limits. Transgression means sin, crossing the limits of legitimacy. So they find it scary and somewhat transgressive to flex their abductive logic muscles, having been taught to see deductive and inductive logic as the only forms of reasonings. Any course, any subject that we learn is based on inductive and deductive logic, reasoning. So for them to do that for the first time, they find it quite challenging. Later on, what happens? They see the light come on as they realize that generative reasoning does not destroy life as we know it. On the contrary, it opens up the doors for new possibilities. That's why we call it possibility thinking also. As you keep on practicing out-of-box thinking exercises, for the first time when you do it, you're blank because your factory setting does not allow you to think differently. But when you keep on doing it differently, you start realizing that it is not a futile exercise. It is not for the sake of fun alone. But through that, you start getting certain solutions for certain complex issues which you never thought of in that direction. Right? The students are asked to use dilemmas they face in their current businesses as a modeling challenge. There's a dilemma, existing dilemma that's going on, that you're facing. You're not able to solve it. You're stuck up there. So visualize or think of those dilemmas. For example, students in the hair care business visited hair salon and watched women get their hair styled. Students interviewed the women in detail on the following day about how women felt about their styling experience. Students were advised not to collect statistical data, underline, but take efforts to seek a better understanding of the end users of the products. Again, I talked about content and process. I'm not here to collect data about who's using what type of hair dyes or what set of, you know, hair styling they want to do. I'm not here for that. I want to know the other attributes of the people. So I go at the back end, and from the back end I come front. From the consumer I come backwards. So I want to know about their experiences, what they go through, right? They employ the understanding to imagine new ways to meet the needs of the women in the salon. In other words, they were to infer backwards from their understanding to the best explanation. In this case, a product that would meet their customers' needs better than, wait, not their competitors, but anything yet in the market. A product which is yet to be launched in the market, which has never seen the light of the day because nobody has thought of it. That's what we would like to understand. Many consumer products in the market, in fact, which have come in the recent about a decade or so, have been addressing certain needs which producers never thought of. Many needs of the consumers are unstated. Now, there have been some consumer research organizations who have thought in this fashion, and they have tried to gauge from the consumers backwards, working backwards, what is it that they really desire, which they don't express. And they have tried it out and experimented. They have found that it succeeds. Not in all cases though. And then they find that this is one need which was unexpressed. An unexpressed need, they had to put it into a form of a need fulfillment through a product or a service. And when that comes, it is amazing. So working backwards, right? MBA students at Rotman sharpen or hone their abductive reasoning skills on the challenges proposed by corporations or non-profit organizations. Students work through a series of exercises, aimed at gaining a deeper understanding of the users of a particular product or a service. Next, they are asked to visualize new ways of serving those users and mentally work their way through a series of prototypes of the new product or the service. The consumers, in short. Initially students as well as executives find their exercises quite unsettling. It's quite disturbing. They can't take it up. Okay? They share with ease certainties about the world and about the deductive and inductive logics that confirm their certainties. That's very easy for them to do. Taking a deductive logic and trying to see the falsity of the truth of something and building up something through an inductive logic and creating a statement. It makes them uneasy to deliberately seek data that unsettles their certainties. They found it quite challenging initially to get into abductive logic, right? However, as they gain practice with the mental exercises, they grow less defensive when faced with disconfirming data and with more eager to make something new of the novel and the different data that they are uncovered. What had been a threat became an exhilarating form of a play for them. Initially, those of you who have attended creativity workshops or those of you who want to be creative, remember that the first stage, everything doesn't make sense to you. Nothing makes sense to you. And then when you keep practicing whatever the trainer tells you, whatever the facilitator tells you, just simply keep on doing it, suddenly you'll find triggers happening in your brain. And initially what happens is there's a discomfort, then comes an excitement of discovering something new. And in conclusion, you have to understand that new what you've discovered as exciting is actually useful for doing something different. That is a real learning of a creative thing. In a creative workshop, they will come out with some creative things which are challenging a factory setting. Initially, you may resist. There are a lot of people who resist initially, but the trainer has to have the skill of gently confronting the person into action by showing them certain paths, making them more and more comfortable with complexity, with something that doesn't make sense to them. That's the skill of the trainer and also the willingness of the trainee, the person who's going through that. So once that keeps going on, gradually a breakthrough stage comes where the person goes through an exhilarating stage. It's an amazing stage. Oh, lovely, something new I'm discovering. But it doesn't stop with that. That discovery new has to be taken further into using that type of reasoning into a problem solving or coming or fixing a dilemma. That application is important. See, many creativity trainers, you know, they take you for the first and the second stage and they drop. After that, you don't know how to apply when you're coming back to the workplace or outside after the training is over. But it's important that the hand-holding takes place so that you're able to apply that wow effect which you've got into a direction of problem solving which has been stuck. A new direction which nobody thinks about. Now that is, according to me, creativity as the way I do it. Right? Now I come to the next type of a thing called causal modeling. We spoke about generative reasoning. Now there's another terminology called causal modeling. Very interesting thing. So let me remind you, generative reasoning is about abductive logic. I come out of my inductive deductive thinking. That's the bottom line. Make a note of it. Causal modeling is what? Let's understand. After generative reasoning, the second tool available for integrative thinkers is causal modeling. Also illustrated by Bletcher. Sophisticated causal modeling is a crucial underpinning for causality and architecture, the middle two steps of the integrative thinking process. In causality step, what do? The thinker must consider non-linear and multi-directional causal links between salient variables. In the architecture step, the thinker must keep the whole interlocking structure of the causal relationships in mind while working on the individual parts of the situation. Let me illustrate. Let me take the first one. Sophisticated causal modeling. Sophisticated means what? Something which is very nice and refined. Which is very refined, right? Sophisticated, we've seen a posh person, sophisticated person. But we are talking about something that is refined, clear. Right? Now, if I want to really get into modeling, causal modeling which is sophisticated, I need to do it for the purpose of creating causality in architecture as the second and the third step. Let's say that we want to go for a vacation, salience, it's given in the book. We want to go for a vacation and I choose to go to, let us say, a hill station. So when I think about a hill station, a particular hill station has already been fixed by me. and then the salience comes. All those things that are important to me at that point of time of thinking, salience. So I put down those points, travel, the place where I stay, the number of days I spend, these may be salient features. So let's say the place I go and the number of days I stay. The place I go and the number of days I stay. These are the two salient features. They give me a causality about looking for various alternatives of stay and choosing one. They also give me a causality about the number of days, chalking it out 10, 4, 10, 8, 7, 4, etc. So those are in the direction of the two salient features which I have frozen. Architecture will be bang on, take one or two, take one of the first and the one of the second and put them into a particular format. Let's say I go from here to Lonavala, Mumbai to Lonavala as a hill station. It's no more a hill station anyway. So we go to Lonavala and then I freeze the causality at say 4 days. So Lonavala 4 days is given as an architecture. Then actually go and do the resolution. Okay. Now all of us know at the resolution stage, I'll be going through experiences which I never expected. I'll go through some experiences which I expected because I had gone before, but I may come through new experiences which are not expected, which may be pleasant or not pleasant. Now, when we are talking about the crucial underpinning for causality in architecture, the middle two steps, and they must consider non-linear multi-directional causal links, let me explain. Going to Lonavala, fixed, one causality. Second one is number of days is 4 days. Now, when I'm going to Lonavala for 4 days, I will take certain assumptions saying that only 4 days, so I don't need too many clothes. I may think of, you know, certain things. It may not rain there. Okay. Now, there are things on which will be based on my past experience, a linear correlation. Now, this linear correlation is the cause of surprises suddenly taking you by the storm, by sweeping the carpet off your feet. Now, Lonavala and 4 days has got a number of things that can happen in that format. I'll go to Lonavala, in that resort I'm expecting peace of mind because I've been there a number of times, but next to that a new resort must have come, I do not know, and there are a lot of noisy people there. 4 days I'm planning, but I suddenly realize that Lonavala is very hot, it's warm, so 4 days is too much. This is something which I never thought of. So when I take salience 1 and salience 2, I'm just giving an example, and I combine those things, a few relations are already known to me from the past experience. But it's not that linear, there are many other things that can affect that my journey there. I'm only discussing two saliences, there are a number of saliences we have. So essentially what we are saying is, in this case, the thinker must consider non-linear and multi-direction causal links between salient variables. Now this requires abductive thinking, the earlier fun we talked about. In the architecture step, the thinker must keep the whole interlocking structure of the causal relationships in mind while working in the individual parts of the solution. I may have to carry some medicines as a result of my multidimensional thinking. Causal links. I may have to take an umbrella with me, although it's middle of winter, non-linear. So these possibilities, I keep them. I may not carry an umbrella, or I may really not think of doing something on a multidimensional thing. But I have to keep them in mind that this could also happen. When I know that this could also happen, I know that this is something that needs to be kept in my awareness and horizon, right? With our factory setting that is biased towards shaping the fabric of our experiences into mental models, we always use models without any conscious efforts, says John Sturman, a professor at MIT Sloan School of Management. It's self-explanatory, easy to understand. Integrative thinkers differ from the rest of us in being more conscious about the tools they choose and use to model. Two forms of causation are important to causal modeling. Now, there are two parts to the causal modeling, which I'll be explaining now. One is called as material causation, which is what we all do. What is causation? Causation means there is a causation is a process by which a certain phenomenon is coming as an outcome because of some actions, cause and effect, right? In the first, which is called as material causation, which says under a certain set of conditions, X causes Y. Causation is what? Material causation means Y has been the material outcome of X happening. Since X has happened, Y is happening as a material outcome. Means it's coming out as a material outcome, right? And if you decrease, for example, if you decrease price, sales volume will increase. This is one of the things which some marketing people believe. Decrease the price, sales volume will increase. Now, all of us know it doesn't always result in sales volume increase. Decrease the cost and increase the profits. Linear relationships, right? This is a typical material causation in which we all do, all work. Give your son less time for recreation and he will study well. Doesn't happen. Ensure that you are taking a day off on weekend so that you can take rest. Weekend off is equal to rest. Doesn't happen. So there are, this material causation is something from where we live and we generalize. It happens in some cases, in maybe many cases, but not in all cases. Now, cleaning your table, for example, material causation. If you clean your table, you will be clear in what you want to do. Maybe 90% of the time, not always. So there are many things that are coming with a material causation statement, right? Now, the second form of causation we know is what is called the teleological causation. Teleological causation, quite a big name. Which asks, what is the purpose of why, or why do we want why to happen? This is what I explained in a different way earlier. By decreasing the cost, I can increase the profits. Or by decreasing the price, I can increase the sales. I question why do I want to increase sales? Now that sounds like a stupid question for a person who's commercially thinking about the company all the time. He says, what ridiculous question you can ask. It's obvious, we are a profit organization, we need to increase sales. But then I'm asking a deeper question. Why do I want to increase sales? So he may say, well, by increasing sales, our top line will improve and our bottom line will improve. We'll get net profits higher. Then I ask a question, why do you want net profits higher? Then he'll give a reason that if my net profits are higher, then the company will do well. I'll be able to give shareholders their dividends, etc., etc. It'll go. Now for every effect, every endpoint is talking about, I question why the endpoint is required. In a teleological, there's a start point and an end point. There's a X and a Y. In the earlier time, in the material causation, we say X will lead to Y. In teleological causation, what are we saying? Why do I want Y? So when I ask why do I want Y, then I start thinking in a direction which I never thought before. The parent tells us his daughter that if you get 90%, you can join a reputed college. Some name is given. So you ask a question, why do I need to go to a reputed college? Because if you go to a reputed college, you will be able to get a good placement. Now, why do I need to have a placement, a good placement? Now, this is not like back answering someone. It is about asking questions to know what is the end purpose of doing this action. Do I need that end purpose with a meaningfulness, or is the end purpose coming because everybody is doing it? We know very well that by decreasing price, we don't always capture the market more than what we have. We also know that by decreasing the cost, we don't increase the profit because something else comes and crops up. Now that is teleological thing. So teleological reasoning will be, ask the end outcome whether it is required or not required. Like that example I gave you, in a company when they ask you to come at 9 a.m. in the morning, the workers are coming at 9 a.m. but they are wasting 1 hour of productive time. Now then you ask a question, why do people have to report at 9 a.m.? Then they'll give some reasons. Then you keep on asking questions teleologically. then you come to know that there are other ways to ensure that people are disciplined. Need not be by putting the gun at the head and saying that if you don't come, half day casual leave is gone or one day casual leave is gone. By doing that, you're creating a whole lot of you're stirring a hornet's nest, and many things happen in the negative direction. Then you try to take control by using more control measures. But then the motivation is lost and people try to be reactive. And for every rule that you set, people are going to break the rule. Instead, ask a question: what is it that we need from the workers? They have to report at 9 o'clock. Okay, if they report, why should they report at 9 o'clock? For this reason. Can we do it differently without using the threat? Now, these are some questions which you need to ask. Then you'll come out with a pragmatic HR policy. Something that works on a long-term sustenance way. We are talking about sustenance, not knee-jerk reactions-based policies, which keep changing from time to time. I know factories where they tell you that we must come at 9 o'clock in the morning for the first wave, 6 months. Then they modify the time to 9:30. You know, everything is very slipshod. Nothing is really clearly understood. And it sets a lot of, flutter. Right? So, for the integrative thinker, as a causal modeler, material causation and teleological, that is design or purpose-based, purpose-based causation connect the way things are to their desired end state. They use both. For Bletcher, the existing state was of disadvantaged, disempowered black youth who had neither hope or opportunity. Apartheid resulted in backwardness of the black community. Okay, material causation. His desired end state was that the black youth would have self-esteem and capability. Why should I educate them? Teleological. Why should they get educated? Because when they get educated, they'll have self-esteem and capability. Why should they have self-esteem and capability? They'll contribute to the state, and the state, which is now a free state, will prosper. Now, that is how planning of the country, many major plans have to be done. Progressive countries do it this way. Right? His task as an integrative thinker was to build a causal model to get from the current state to the desired end state. The material causation that he envisioned was to give the students the tools they needed to understand their world better and contribute to it. If I give you this, this is what you'll be doing. And they did it. The process has to build tremendous sense of ownership in the students and a sense of self-belief. This material causation requires a narrow and a specific set of conditions to be operative. The school is given as a construction, as a building. The classrooms are there. The kitchen, etc. are all there. And the students are supposed to be doing this. So X is leading to Y. The presence of X is leading to Y. Education is that enormously loving, enormously holistic, and really does give the students the opportunity to completely change the way they feel about themselves. Bletcher's challenge as an integrative thinker, imagining what might be, was to visualize the causal relationships in enough depth and detail that his vision would hold up in the real world. When facing this challenge, a certain tools known as systems dynamics, now a third terminology I'm introducing, systems dynamics. Systems dynamics simply says that there is a system like the human body, the organization, it's got number of parts. Every part is independently functioning on its own, but they are connected with each other so that the whole organization, the body, starts functioning efficiently. If any one organ or any one part of the organization of the body does not function properly, it affects the whole organization of the body. Systems approach. Let's explain from here. When facing this challenge, certain tools known as system dynamics can improve the causal modeling. Systems dynamics is a theory of mapping the activity of complex systems that J. Forrester of MIT developed. He brought the tool set from the engineering domain and applied it to the business world. Because the 7S system, wherein we have a system and there are 7 S's that are all connected in the world of management, right? Systems dynamics holds that the results of decisions are so often disappointing because we overlook important causal relationships. It actually happened in an engineering factory. The canteen had a problem about some snack whose weight has got reduced by the contractor. In the canteen, in the workers' canteen, there was a contractor who was serving a snack whose net weight had reduced. You know, the canteens in industrial canteens are run by a canteen committee, which is comprising of workers, labor, etc. You know, the labor people and all. Now, those people, they're very sharp in realizing that we are paying X amount of money to get less weight of that particular foodstuff. They came to know. And they went and addressed and confronted that contractor very violently. How dare you do this? And when the contractor started also being violent with them, it was a private interaction, the management was not involved. Suddenly, you know, it became a big flutter. And do you know what happened? The production in the shop floor stopped for 15 minutes. Now, a contractor who's serving snacks in the canteen is one part of the system of the whole organization called the factory. Now, would you ever imagine and expect that the weight of a snack which came down and the pricing was held constant, which the workers noticed and confirmed, could create a stoppage of production? But it happened. It's very interesting, very hilarious to notice that, but anything in an organization can affect anything else in the organization. A trivial thing in an organization can affect. An executive uttered a word to some worker or another executive, and that word was taken by the second executive, who heard it as something very, very offensive. It led to a huge amount of disturbance in that particular place. And then they had to have intervention of the outsiders. And in that 3 days, production came to a standstill. So now, one has to map and understand that what seemed to be seemingly unrelated or seemingly insignificant is not as insignificant. Because anything can be significant when the time comes. In fact, all are significant. Some of them do not appear to be significant. In the afternoon, when you're a regular tea drinker and you don't get your tea in the afternoon, that insignificant thing with respect to your whole day, isn't it not significant? Because at that point of time, it's so important. You may get a headache, you may get something else. So, no part of a system is insignificant, every part is significant. And the relationship between the various system parts is not as linear, it is much more complex. This understanding has to happen. Then, when the understanding itself, you are accepting that there is more complexity than what I think it is, that means you are saying there is a better model. I'm seeing only certain limited connections as of now. There is something more, let me explore. Newer experiences through patience will open up those relationships which you don't see today. Right? Or as we misread causal relationships usually by assuming them to be linear and unidirectional, when in reality they are in fact non-linear and multidirectional. A primary focus of systems dynamics is often one sort of causal relationships, multidirectional feedback, loops that accelerate relationship between variables. As much of linear data you have, you are into one single direction. But as much of multiple data you have, you are able to fan out and have more options, more choices. That's important today, right? Systems dynamics experts call that an accelerating feedback loop. Accelerating feedback loop. It accelerates, it makes things faster. In this case of the industrial canteen, if somebody had given a thought that this could happen, because our workers are very intelligent, they measured actually that particular foodstuff, and they found there was a grammage discrepancy. They went to that extent. Now, if already somebody made this as one of the possibilities that could go wrong, remote possibility, would they have averted that 15 minutes of production break or not? They would have. They would have given a very clear-cut thing that whenever you are making these foodstuff, see that the measure is there, see that there is somebody who comes and validates it so that there is no problems. Now, these are things that appear trivial. They may appear to be time-consuming for certain people, but then the fact is, if this is done, it actually sustains a lot of things in the long run. Right? A person could not model the dynamic accurately or intelligently without an ability to imagine non-linear multi-directional causal relationships. So if we really want to create a model which is going to work in the long run, I need to have multiple choices.